Thank you very much, Mark. Yes, there is only one slide that's not from the Great Plains, and I didn't think about it. It's the one on the start here. That's actually where I'm from in Ontario. Otherwise, all the photos are from the Great Plains. Now, I'm going to talk about causes of management, soil landscape variability, because I think it's essential to really understanding what's effective soil conservation in the Great Plains. And some of the issues around soil erosion and soil conservation, I think, are rather unique to the Great Plains, and hence there's a special session on just that. So this is an example of soil erosion, soil landscape variability in the fields we see in many parts of the Great Plains that are undulating to hummocky. And when you look at these landscapes, there's obviously a lot of soil erosion that's occurred in many of these landscapes that have been tilled. We have organic material that's lost on the hilltops and subsoil is exposed, and obviously creates a lot of variability in soil properties and then also in crop production as well as other biophysical processes. And this is a good example of how severe some of these cases can be. This is from Manitoba. The previous picture was from Minnesota. And you can get obviously very significant yield losses in some years. It would be very typical to see 30 to 40% yield losses on those eroded hilltops. And that probably represents the greatest soil quality problem we have in our fields. And I do distinguish soil quality and soil conservation from water conservation and water quality. And it's long been assumed that wind erosion and water erosion are the primary causes, the only causes for soil erosion, soil degradation in this region. And people have spent a lot of time and effort looking at wind erosion, in particular, because it's the prairies. Wind erosion and water erosion do certainly cause significant erosion, affecting both agriculture and the environment. But before we come to conclusion of what actually is the erosion problem or processes involved, I want you to consider these slides. This is from a textbook by Dr. Ellis, James Ellis, in Manitoba, writing on the soils of the Manitoba region of the Northern Great Plains. And this is his representation in 1938 of a native grassland soil in the prairies, on hummocky landscape. And obviously a lot of soil variability simply related to the biology and hydrology. But within about 4 years' time, about 1940, this was published in 1938, and there was probably only about 30 to 40 years of tillage in much of the land, at least in the Canadian portion of the Great Plains, you would have significant soil losses on hilltops and accumulation represented down here in the lower slope position, and that was what he considered to be the typical pattern of soil loss or soil redistribution in those plains. And by the time I started my work in the 1980s, this was considered to be the fairly common pattern, where you have more severe soil losses on the hilltops and certainly thicker soils than lower slope positions. And this is about the time that we see a lot of the modern soil conservation programs that we have today. Now, if you look at the processes, if you look at the pattern and the process associated with them, certainly wind and water erosion do not explain that pattern. There's just no way that pattern can be caused by wind erosion. It just does not happen. It's actually primarily caused by tillage erosion, that pattern of soil loss. Tillage erosion, for people who don't know it, is simply the redistribution, net redistribution of soil caused by the variability in how much soil is moved. And areas where you decrease soil movement, you get accumulation. Where soil loss increases, you get loss occurring. And it can be either a function of how far soil is moved or how much soil is moved. So variation, either one of those two ways of looking at soil movement, will cause loss and gain. And on these hilly landscapes, which is typical of the prairie region, you get variation in soil movement as you're moving up and down slope. It's quite striking. And you get loss and accumulation associated with it. And lo and behold, it's the exact same pattern you see on almost every single cultivated landscape. And we obviously see the eroded hilltops in many of these photos, but you also see other evidence when you look at various types of boundaries or fixed features in fields, whether that be hydropoles, fence lines, top or bottom of the fence lines, you get undercutting and filling associated with any of those slope discontinuities. And if you look at this landscape, I've taken this obviously much further than Ellis, but taking it to 1980 and now 2010, I think we're actually approaching what we consider to be a fairly advanced state of erosion, where we get very significant soil losses on the hilltops. Could be anywhere from 50 to 100 centimeters of lost material on many of the hilltops, and accumulation material down at the bottom. But in many of these landscapes now, we're starting to see this unproductive subsoil actually moving down and draping or covering the topsoil. And if you look down into the into these profiles, you can actually see the original A horizon is buried, and lesser quality material above the above that buried A horizon. If Bert, is Bert VandenBeghart still here? Oh, there he is there. And Bert had a couple posters on that actually yesterday. And it's a very common feature. You just have to look for it. And it's a clear indication that tillage erosion is very active. In many of these areas, you can find those in the areas where water erosion should be occurring. And I'll show you that picture of that in a minute. Now, if that advanced state of erosion exists, this bad situation will actually get much worse. You actually start to reduce productivity throughout the whole landscape, not just the eroded hilltops. And that's what we're concerned about. We may actually be heading into that. Just to give you some results to back up this information on tillage erosion, if you're not aware of it, the severe soil loss on those hilltops can be anywhere from 20 to 100 tons per hectare per year, and we've measured as much as 2 to 250 tons per hectare per year on those eroded hilltops. Far exceeds anything you could ever predict or measure by wind or water erosion. And those areas are quite significant in the area of 15 to 30% of the cultivated landscape typically. Tillage erosion causes more soil redistribution within some landscapes than wind or water erosion and probably all cultivated landscapes pretty much anywhere in the world. Tillage erosion acts as a major delivery mechanism for water erosion, delivering soil to convergent areas of the landscape where overland flow would concentrate and cause water erosion. This is a nice shot of hill slope where you have these troughs, where you actually have water erosion occurring. You can see the rills and the sediment fans. But if you go into these areas, you probably find they still have intact soils. It's actually the soils on the hilltops adjacent to them that are actually where they have soil loss, and that's because tillage erosion is moving in and replacing soil that's being lost by water erosion. You have these processes operating in concert or in tandem. And tillage erosion exposes subsoil, which is highly erodible to wind and water erosion. So because you have tillage erosion, you actually will get more wind and water erosion in some of those areas of the landscape where you wouldn't expect it. And land which is severely eroded has highly variable crop production, and that may not be restored, may actually worsen under conservation tillage. And I'm going to give you some experimental data to emphasize that. We've often, when you look at soil conservation, we talk about how we've moved away from the moldboard plow and have gone to things like chisel plows, various types of, in Manitoba they call them deep rippers, but essentially they're chisel plows. And they certainly leave more residue on the surface than a moldboard plow, but they move more soil to greater distances with a greater variability. And it's not uncommon to see more tillage erosion with a chisel plow than you would a moldboard plow. As well, we don't often think about soil conservation when we look at these operations that occur after seeding, but this is an example of potato production, and you see a lot of that in the prairie region, the Great Plains region, and those operations associated with the seeding, the hilling, and ultimately harvesting of crops such as potatoes actually are the most erosive processes in the whole operation. Kevin Thiessen, who presented yesterday, and this is the back of the room, he just came in, when looking at the erosion associated with that, it's probably 2 to 3 times more than the primary tillage operations. You can get more erosion caused by these operations than you can from all the primary and secondary combined. And then you look at seeding operations, probably the biggest soil conservation initiative we've had in the Great Plains and probably throughout North America, going to no-till or zero-till. When you actually look at some of the operations that we call no-till or zero-till, some of them are actually fairly high disturbance direct seeding, more so than they are no-till or zero-till, and they can actually be as erosive as a moldboard plow. And I will show you some data for that. I've got some data here on the right-hand side. These are erosivity constants or coefficients, and these are what we use to measure that variability or that net movement by various operations. When you have very low disturbance operations, such as air seeding with knives, you have very small numbers, and I'll explain these what the relative magnitude of them are in a minute, but that's when you're down towards zero, that's negligible. When you look at, and this is for conventional tillage and zero-till, if you look at having sweeps on the seeding units and having high disturbance seeding operations, you can actually get significant amounts of tillage erosion or tillage erosivity, and therefore tillage erosion. These values of one are about the same as a moldboard plow. You don't move very much soil, but you move it with a lot more variability. And because of that, you get a lot more tillage erosion than you'd expect. And I mentioned the value of one for the mobile bore plow. Chisel plow can be 1 to 1.5, close to 2. Tandem disc could be as much as 2. And these tertiary tillage operations can be as much as 3. So it really makes us look at soil movement by tillage quite differently. And there's a number of things you can use to control tillage erosion and soil erosion. The one I wanted to highlight here is reduce the intensity and variability. It's not just how much residue it's on the surface, it's how much soil you move without how much variability. If you just look at residue levels as a soil conservation metric, you are probably missing the boat when it comes to soil conservation in the Great Plains. The other point there, just at the end, is you can actually use this knowledge to your advantage in soil conservation. I'm just going to illustrate that with talking about this situation where we've moved this soil within a landscape, this mature state of erosion. You can actually move that topsoil because it's caused by tillage erosion. It's all deposited at the base of the slope. It doesn't actually leave the field. So that resource is sitting there, and it can be put back up on those eroded hilltops to regain productivity. And we refer to that as landscape rehabilitation or landscape restoration. And Sharon Papiernik, who was in here earlier, there she is there. It's right on my glasses on. She's worked on this with Tom Schumacher, Mike Lindstrom in South Dakota and Minnesota. And we've also done a fair bit of work in Manitoba on this. And other people have looked at things from a different perspective, but essentially looking at moving soil to see how you can gain productivity. And this is not a new concept. It's actually very old, but people have tended to ignore it when they look at soil conservation. This is from France in the 1930s, but actually has occurred in many parts of the world historically. But we've just never recognized it as part of soil management and soil conservation. And some of the experiments we have done, which is, again, similar to what's been done in Minnesota and South Dakota, taking some soil from the bottom where it's not being utilized or being underutilized and putting it on the hilltop where it's desperately needed, you can actually gain back quite a bit of productivity. And there's showing some data from a set of experiments we did. You can actually gain quite a significant amount of crop production on those eroded hilltops. The amount you'd lose on the bottom of the slopes doesn't seem to be very significant. And the net result is you actually get a net benefit by looking at the whole landscape. And just to summarize some of that research, by moving as little as 10 centimeters of topsoil on the severely eroded land, you actually can bump up the yields by 10 to 33% in wet years and 39 to 140% in dry years. Those high numbers are pretty easy when you have essentially no crop production as a control. Now, although there is a significant reduction in removal in some cases, there's still a net increase in crop production when you look at the whole landscape. Landscape restoration provides continued yield response on the hilltops for several years. We've tracked one of our sites as much as 4 years until the money ran out. And that productivity did continue on beyond the first year. So it's just not rapid mineralization of organic matter. You actually do get benefits probably related to fertility and moisture management. And then when you look at the economics, we did actually look at the economics in a few studies. We were challenged to try and do that because no one would believe what we were generating. The final study, which we finished last January in the end, we found that when you look at all the costs associated with moving that topsoil, you would pay for that practice in about 4 to 6 years. I think it's about 3.5 to 5.4 years. So if you want to manage soil variability and conserve soil, you must manage the causes, and I think that's very important when we look at soil conservation in the prairies or the Great Plains. And with that, thank you. I was surprised. Coming from southern Ontario, I'd never seen an earth mover at a field scale. Out in the prairie region, there are small earth movers all over the place. And so many of the farmers have it because they use it to manage their surface drains. So they're very accessible. So they just put them on the back of a tractor and scrape the soil and move it around. We've looked at, no, there's actually no estimates. It's impossible to separate it out. But if you look at the patterns are completely inconsistent with wind erosion. You don't get it on the highly erodible soils. It's not specific to them. And the pattern does not reflect any prevailing wind direction. The patterns actually reflect tillage patterns, more so than they reflect wind patterns. Now, we have started a project with Li Sheng, who's just in front of you there, in Alberta, looking at potato area on the highly erodible soils there. And we're having a hard time actually measuring any historical wind erosion on those very highly erodible landscapes. So we think that a lot of the wind erosion estimates we have for at least Canada, but I argue probably for all the Great Plains, are very, very overestimated. But certainly not on those hilltops. There's no real evidence of very strong wind erosion on those hilltops.